guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Gender Free Friday is brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Why drive when you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home? Visit SkiNeshoba.com. Our thanks to them again at Gender Free Friday. 4 o'clock every Friday, Chris Casper of the Boston Globe joins us. He is now in studio. Jim Murray's alongside Marshall Hook here to give us headlines. We'll get back to your calls here momentarily. We were just saying at the top of the hour, though, Chris. We're 2 weeks out now, basically, from the Super Bowl. Okay, 2 weeks out. Do you have any greater clarification on what happened with Malcolm Butler than you did in the immediate aftermath of the game?
Yeah, come on, Scoops. Tell us. What
do
you know?
No, I don't have any greater clarification on what happened. I don't. I mean, I think everybody's trying to get it, trying to figure out what went on. And what's strange about it to me, and I'm not saying that Malcolm Butler is this caliber of player, because he's clearly not. But let's say it was like an off-the-field thing. Let's say it was something, you know, to do with why he didn't fly with the team to Minneapolis. You know, he had the flu, or so they said, on Monday. You know, that type of thing, to me, wouldn't rise to the level of benching the guy. And being in Minnesota, he was really upbeat on Wednesday and Thursday, the last couple of days of media availability. So I feel like that's the type of thing where they would have told him earlier in the week, hey, you know, whatever happened here, you didn't make this flight, you're being punished. And even if you were to do something like that, I always go back to this. I'm like, this is Bill Belichick. This guy coached Lawrence Taylor. Like, they weren't even sure this guy was going to show up for the games. You know, never mind being on team flights and all this other stuff. And again, clearly, Malcolm Butler is nowhere near the player that Lawrence Taylor was. But Bill in the past has put up with a lot of guys who were sort of pains in the rear and a little unreliable away from the field. But if you can play, you'll get to play. So it had to be something else that was done. And I don't buy the reason that they gave that it was strictly football. Because if it was strictly football, halfway through that game, they would have looked at it and said, okay, this was what the original game plan was. Much like Super Bowl 51, where the original game plan was, hey, let's pound the Garrett Blunt. Oh, crap, that's not working and we're down. Let's change it. They would have changed the original game plan and the strictly football reasons he was benched and put him in the game.
Yeah, because strictly on a football basis, Jordan Richards and Johnson Batamosi were not working. You would have fixed that, and for whatever reason, he decided not to.
So, Chris, when you say it's not football, what are you getting at? Like, because I'm unclear as to, do you think it was disciplinary or do you think it was personal?
It could have been either one of those two, but I would.
I would lean more in that direction than
football, because I think if it's disciplinary for something sort of like, you know, off the field, lack of judgment or not being punctual or reliable or giving some ridiculous excuse for why you can't show up to work. You know, that's the type of thing where I think you notify the player in advance what's going on. That's not the type of thing to me where Bill would wait 4 days later, 5 days later, and then say, hey, you know, what were you doing Sunday night that you couldn't make our flight to Minneapolis with the rest of the team? And then tell him the day of the Super Bowl, yeah, you're not starting because of that. That just doesn't seem to me like the way Bill would approach it.
So you think it was probably personal on some level?
Personal or some issue with somebody in the organization, whether it's Bill, whether it's Patricia, whether it's somebody in the coaching staff other than Patricia, something like that would make a lot more sense based on the timing.
Okay, so again, but when you say issue,
yeah,
what do you mean? Like a physical?
I don't know, Maz. I'm speculating. Yeah, you're trying to draw something out of me that I don't know. I'm just speculating.
No, I'm not being a wise ass.
No, you're not. But I'm telling you, like, if I knew more, I'd tell you guys.
I just, you know, to me, it's either disciplinary or there's a personal thing that Bill couldn't get past. And maybe you're sort of combining the two. But I look at it and say, see, I think that there's a personal thing there that got in the way on some level and clouded his judgment.
Yeah.
And so whether and it probably emanates from the contract, he didn't have a good year. And then they get to the Super Bowl and he looked at the matchups and he said, well, we're going to go this way anyway. So you know what? I'm going to put Eric Rowe in the game, and we're going to have Rowe on. We're going to have Rowe on Alshon Jeffrey to start, which frankly, I thought was a mistake anyway. Even if Butler had played, Gilmore should have been the guy on Alshon Jeffrey.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why they started that way, but it feels to me like, again, his opinion of Butler through the course of the year influenced the decision in some capacity. And the other things that we've heard, and this is now a popular theory that's out there, that they're, you know, what if the confrontation had happened right before the game? What if there was some sort of incident with an assistant coach,
sure,
Bill himself?
I mean, that would make a lot of sense.
Okay, but again, then why did he get in on special teams? Even if it was for one play, if there was an incident with a coach, that Belichick team to be so, you know, severe that he wasn't going to play him in the Super Bowl. Why did he get on the field for the punt?
It's a great question. I don't know. But, I mean, the only thing I can think, and Bill's a lot more media sensitive than he lets on, but it's the simple difference between saying you didn't allow the guy to play in the Super Bowl and he didn't play a defensive snap. I mean, I know that's really sort of parsing it, but that's the type of parsing that he would look at. You know, somebody would say, hey, you know, you bench Malcolm Butler. Like, there'll be a question and say, you know, Bill, you never told us why you bench Malcolm Butler. He'll say, what game are you watching? Malcolm Butler played. You know, he loves that type of stuff where, like, you know, 96% of the question is accurate and 4% is not, and he'll jump on the 4% to try and invalidate the 96%, which is really the issue at hand. He's the master of that.
Can either of you speak to this? So I just got a message from Dan the Angry Call Screener, who said that they had to play him in at least one play in the Super Bowl to qualify for him to get a third-round compensatory pick in 2 years. That's why he played on special teams. Is that how that can work in terms of, you know, with that, like, that ups what pick they'll get once he goes to another team this offseason?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on how he gets classified as a free agent, what kind of contract he gets. There could have been something with the snap count, the percentage of snaps that he would have played for the season. Because obviously, but he was at, what, 98% for the season until the Super Bowl? So I would think he would already be in the clear on that. So I'm not ruling it out.
How sneaky would that be if that's what that...
I'm not ruling it out, but I don't know enough about that to...
Yeah, me either.
Be able to verify that.
And Chris, just quickly, doesn't that formula also depend on how he plays for his new team?
I think it does to some degree. I think it has to do with the contract that he ends up signing. It also has to do with how many free agents they end up signing. I mean, it's a complicated formula, and honestly, I don't know it. I'm not going to act like I know it off the top of my head, but there's a lot of factors in there. Play time is a factor, and play time will be a factor with his team moving forward. Remember the LeGarrette Blount stuff this year? It was like they needed him to be on the roster a certain amount of games, you know, to be able to get the compensatory pick that they're hoping to get. But there's a lot of factors there. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them that the one snap would be something, but it would just seem odd because he was already at 98%.
Yeah, I think Belichick wanted to stick it to him. That's what I think. Johnny B's in Maine. Johnny B, what do you got?
You know, guys, I've been listening to you the whole time about not trying to figure out a normal way to look at what he did with Butler, because it's not normal what he did. So I don't trust him, like Leo in the car said. I don't trust Belichick at all. I don't like him. I haven't liked him for years, even though I'm a Pats fan. And I think he had the perfect pawn with Butler to leave him out and show Brady, nobody else, Brady, that you've been driving me crazy with your Guerrero sprinkling, you know, unicorn dust all over you. I have to go get him kicked out of the locker room, kicked off the planes. He wants football only. And then Brady releases Tom versus Time at the conference finals. He wanted that to wait till after all this was over so they could win it. When Butler was standing on that sideline, look at Harmon's eyes with his hand around him. You just showed it. They were so mad. And Bill wanted that to go like that, but he didn't plan that they were going to backfire on Bill. I think the defense gave up to do to Belichick what he was trying to do to Brady.
Well, Johnny, I don't know if they gave up, but I think you could, you know, I think you can legitimately argue that they were, you know, in some level of disarray at the beginning of the game, and maybe disarray is the wrong word, distracted at the beginning of the game, because they certainly didn't look ready to go in the early, very early part of that game. They didn't look ready to go the whole night. The game plan sucked, frankly. But I think you could argue that if the Butler thing did happen right before game time, that it created some level of confusion or distraction that affected them on the field. You know, Chris, what I do find interesting about the story is that, you know, usually when Belichick makes a mistake, there are people still who will line up to defend him. And nobody is defending him on this one. He's been getting killed on this to the point where you hear people like that last caller say, I've lost confidence in him, which leads us to a question about the Patriots going forward that I actually want to ask Chris about when we come back. We'll do that next.
The Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's like the Patriots, obviously, they won 5 Super Bowls, so it's the Patriot way to win the Super Bowl. Does that mean that everybody has to act the same way, do the same thing? Is that the necessarily guidelines to win the Super Bowl?
Right.
And this comment I actually agree with. Like, you know what? The Patriot way is the only way?
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And that's always sort of bothered me. That I feel like the way they comport themselves with the media, and in terms of it being, you know, CIA level of discretion. I don't think that has anything to do with winning. I think you could take a team that has Tom Brady and a great coach and is more media friendly. Now, look, you can't act like a bunch of clowns. You can't be the Steelers. But I think there's a happy medium there. I do.
Oh, for sure. And look, before we went to break, I said, Chris, I wanted to ask you something more long term about Belichick, the confidence that fans have in him, where the team is headed, all that sort of stuff. And I look at, again, I can't remember another time in Belichick's tenure here, at least since they started winning. I mean, if you want to go back to 2000, I guess, you know. But since 01, I can't remember another time where there has been any sort of, you know, a controversial decision or controversial story where Belichick got as little support as he is getting right now. And the fact that it's coming at this stage when he's won as much as he's won to me is borderline staggering. Like, I thought there would be more people lined up saying, hey, in Bill I trust. Yeah. Whatever it is, you know, people like Marshall who are just willing to swallow what Belichick has given him here on Super Bowl Sunday.
Because it's indefensible. And when everything was going the way that it was going, you have to put him in that game at some point. Please, just to do try something to stop the bleeding.
Well, I think it's the magnitude of the game, and I also think it's how poor the performance was defensively. I think when you combine those two things with it, I think that's what makes it different. If this were the third game of the regular season, then I think there would be people who would be pulling the in Bill, I trust routine.
So here's my question now. The Garoppolo deal, they didn't get enough back.
No.
There's no two ways about that. Again, we can debate. I didn't want them to trade Garoppolo at all. But all of that aside, I think everyone can agree they didn't get enough for Garoppolo. So if the Crafts are looking at that going, what the hell did you do that for, Bill? And then the Crafts are looking at it saying, Bill, why the hell didn't you play Butler in the Super Bowl? What's the story there? And these are things that have been reported by people like Burt Breer and Greg Bedard and Peter King, and you know that the Crafts question these moves too. Now Josh McDaniels has been secured, presumably for the long term, and it appears that he is the heir apparent. And now you're hearing things coming out about McDaniels having a significant hand in the drafting and development of Garoppolo. So my question to you is, who should pick the next quarterback? If this is a transition and McDaniels is being handed the keys and it'll take place over a year, say, and he's going to be the guy that has to go forward, shouldn't McDaniels pick the next quarterback?
Well, I mean, Bill's still there, though, and he's going to have the final say from a personnel standpoint. And look, Josh has had input before with quarterbacks that they've selected. Josh was big on Kevin O'Connell when they used a third-round pick on him. So Josh will have input. I think in terms of Josh being more involved in personnel, I think it's Bill's going to give him a window into the way he thinks and the way he builds a team. Which, to me, I think that's been underplayed. It's stunning to me that Josh has been with the Patriots as long as he has, and to watch that Two Bills documentary where Belichick's talking about how Parcells took the time to sort of educate him on what it's like to be a head coach and having to build a roster and manage some of these things. Like, why hasn't Bill done this stuff already? Like, that was shocking to me. That this would be some enticement for Josh. This idea that all of a sudden Bill's going to let you in on what it means to be a head coach and put the whole thing together.
Don't you think he has done it already and that this part's being... See, I think it's being overplayed.
Maybe you're right. I just the fact that would even come up to me, I was like, what do you mean? He hasn't done this already?
Chris, there were stories written after 08 when he took the Denver job about how Belichick had spent time with him in 07 and 08 to try to introduce him to some of the things that he would encounter as a head coach, and that he was preparing him for leaving Foxborough. If that took place 10 years ago, how the hell is it some sort of reward now?
I don't know. It's however, based on Josh's performance and personnel evaluations in Denver, did it look like Belichick took him under his wing for that stuff?
Actually, it did, yeah, right down to the videotaping, now that you get to it.
Oh, that's a cheap shot.
Well, you know, look, I think that he tried to act like Belichick. I think that was his mistake in Denver.
No, I agree, in terms of trying to act like him from a demeanor standpoint.
And anything but you just read about the time there, it was, you know, paranoia, secrecy,
oh, yeah,
all of the same kind
guys
of stuff.
Guys saying they didn't like playing for him. It was crazy.
He'd been around him long enough.
But he made some terrible trades, and he drafted Tim Tebow in the first round.
He'd been around him long enough that this is, like, that to me was just like, okay, why are you trying to, like, spruce up this story a little bit more? Because it was a bad look that he spurned the Colts at the last minute? Like,
maybe. You know, maybe I'm falling for it, but the fact that was even, I was like, this is strange. Like, why wouldn't he have done this stuff already?
See, I love you, Chris, but you're falling for it.
Maybe I am. Yeah, maybe I am falling for it.
I think it's being way overplayed. The guy spent 15 years with Belichick, and all of a sudden, just now, Bill's going to say, oh, yeah, by the way, let me show you this. Like, no way. That happened a long time ago. Our buddy Dakota's in Braintree. Dakota, what do you got?
Okay, so I have a theory on this whole Butler thing, and I want to get Casper's view on it, okay, and see what you think.
Gasper with a G.
Same thing. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, sure. Whatever, Fakoda.
Oh, hey, be careful. You could have got muted on that.
Yeah.
So what I believe is Butler was not supposed to play in the first half, and that was the game plan. And Butler got into the game on that punt return, you know, for the gunner position or whatever you want to call it. And Bill said, you're not supposed to be in there. Why'd you go out there? Now you're sitting down for the rest of the game. It's the only thing that makes sense to me that he was out there when he wasn't supposed to.
I didn't follow that, Chris, because I was talking
to Jimmy. No, he was saying the idea that Butler basically sneaked on the field on special teams. Bill noticed it, and that's why he didn't play in the second half. That it was supposed to just be a first-half benching, but Butler sneaks out there, and Bill finds out and says, now you're sitting out the second half.
Murray, you believe that?
No. If he was going to sneak out, I would have liked to think he would have snuck out on a defensive play rather than a useless special teams play.
Tell you what, I love Dakota. He's called this show with some asinine theories. That one's at the top of the list. Seriously, Kevin's in Rhode Island. Kevin, go.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Please bear with me on my take. I feel very strongly about this. I can't wrap my head around the fact that Bill didn't know he wasn't going to be able to keep Jimmy G. Because his value was at the highest before last season's draft. The team could have added one or two, maybe three really blue chip players to the defense. It would not only have helped you win the Super Bowl, but it would have helped you end Brady's career. I can't wrap my head around why no one's brought this fact up. I'd like to hear all three of your guys' opinions. Thanks for taking my call.
So, look, I'll tell you what. When you think of it in those terms, because we haven't really looked that far back. We all said he could have gotten more at the draft, which is fact.
Yes.
On top of it, they could have drafted players, and this was one of the arguments for moving him at the time, Murray, right? I think you said this. On top of it, had they gotten help on the defense at the time, maybe they'd have won a Super Bowl as a result
maybe
of it.
Maybe Zach Cunningham running around at linebacker. Guy. That was your guy, Murray.
Certainly could have used Zach Cunningham in the Super Bowl, much more than, Eric Lee or Kyle Van Noy or pick a bum. It will forever frustrate me that they didn't get enough in return for this guy is one of the dark marks on Bill Belichick's legacy here.
I mean, when you really think of it in those terms, like the mismanagement of the asset hurt
yes.
them on so many levels.
Well, and to me, the tip off that this was never the master plan is regardless of what you think of Jacoby Brissett, but do you think they would have dealt him?
No way.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No way.
I mean, you've invested a second and third round pick in these young quarterbacks, and you're just going to give them, you know, both away. And I think Bill's hand got forced on that one. And the way that he can justify the return is to say, wait a second. You're telling me I can't keep the guy. I got to get rid of him. You're telling me I can't franchise him. So our options are we let him walk. He's a free agent. So all we get is a compensatory pick, not even this year, but next year. And that would be after the third round. Well, I can send him to my boy Shanahan. He's no longer in the AFC, and I'll get a second round pick. So you're telling me this is what I have to do? I just did better than we were going to get if I just let him walk. So this is what it is.
Right. And where did they draft Garoppolo? Didn't they draft him at 62 or something like that? So maybe in his mind, well, I move up the 20 spots or whatever it is in the second round. And, you know, not that that's enough. I'm not saying that. Because they whiffed.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it's like, how do you evaluate the guy? Do you look and say, okay, this is a second-round pick, a bottom-of-the-second-round guy? Or do you look at it and say, this is the most valuable commodity in football, a potential franchise quarterback? I look at it from the latter standpoint. This is the most valuable commodity in football, and I need to get a fair return for it, and I don't think that they did. But if he's ticked off or he feels like he's been put in a box here, in a bind, which I think that's the way he felt, then you look at it, you make the deal, and there were reports, right, that, you know, he went to the crafts with the deal, and they signed off on it. So maybe that's the way it gets pitched. You're telling me I can't franchise him. You're telling me I have to move him. If we let him walk away for nothing, we're going to get a compensatory pick in 2019, you know, after the third round. Instead, I can get you a second-round pick in this draft from this team. And I think at the time that they were thinking, too, like, this pick is probably going to be the first or second pick of the second round. Again, I still don't think that's enough, but that's what they were thinking. Then Jimmy gets on the field there, and they win five in a row, and it's a totally different circumstance in terms of the pick. The pick's going to be 9-10 spots lower than you thought it was going
to
be.
To me, there's no defending the mismanagement of the asset. Okay, if they traded him in
by the franchise or by Belichick, though? Because I think those are two different things.
By Belichick.
Okay.
By Belichick. There's no defending it.
Even if the circumstances change for him.
Because had they opened it up to other teams, Chris, at the trade deadline, they'd have gotten a higher pick than they would have gotten out of the Niners. Had he called up the Browns, he'd have gotten a higher pick out of it.
But did he not want him in the AFC?
Well, again, but with the Browns? Like, are the Browns really a major concern? He's going to hurt us with the Browns?
Like, I don't know.
That is
a lot of these dopes look a lot better when you hand him a quarterback.
That's football hell. Like, talk about burying a guy. Cleveland is the place to bury a guy.
Yeah, but every dog does have its day. I mean, this was one of the laughing stocks of the league for the longest time, you know?
But, I think about
it. Or maybe he just didn't want to do that. So, to your point, let's say I buy what you're saying. Maybe he just didn't want to do that to Jimmy. So, okay, so it is football Hades. I'm not going to send Jimmy there.
And on top of it, I go back to the draft, and I hadn't even thought about this. If they had done it at the draft, they could have taken players that might have been able to help them this year.
Absolutely. But he wasn't going to do it at the draft because he didn't plan to do it. He didn't plan to do it at all.
Boy, did they mismanage the asset colossally. Colossally, they mismanaged the asset. And I don't know, maybe that whole thing is at the core of the dysfunction that has been taking place
Am
I allowed to use that word dysfunction, or is it tension? Which word is it? Dysfunction? Dysfunction? I can't use the word. I say dysfunction, they say tension. Is that the deal?
Yes.
I'm going to use the word dysfunction. Sorry, just my two cents.
But that means that they would be sabotaging their own plan, Tony.
Marshall's got your headlines when we come back. I want to get to Gasper base with Gasper on the Red Sox. We'll do that next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think just tension in the locker room as far as if things are down. We have to find a way to smile and go out and refocus on the game now versus kind of what's been going on. I think this year will be a little different. I'm going to approach things a little differently as far as, if I'm not playing well or if we're losing and whatnot, I can do my best to try and find a way to get everybody back happy, smiling, excited, and going to play.
But with regard to Mookie Betts' comments, and again, Chris Casper of the Globe is in studio, as he is every Friday here during the 4 o'clock hour. What'd you make of those comments yesterday, Betts and Bogart?
Yeah, I mean, I thought those were important comments. And I think when you look at the contrition that David Price finally showed when he showed up in Fort Myers, just sort of saying, I could have handled it better and sort of acknowledging things, which he didn't do last year. I think these guys are telling you that some of Price's misery and negativity seeped into the rest of the clubhouse and that that was an issue for this team. And I think it's one of the reasons they never hit their stride. So for them to be able to sort of admit that last year they were affected by not really having a leader or having somebody try and step into the leadership role who's clearly miserable in Boston, I think that's significant because they're saying it's going to be different this year. And they recognize that it has to be different if they're going to be able to advance past the first round and get the most out of whatever their roster ends up being. If it ends up being exactly the same as it was last year, or if they do bring in J.D. Martinez. And I think it's also Mookie taking a step forward to take on more of a leadership role. I mean, for him to acknowledge that, he's putting himself out there a little bit, which he has not done up until this point.
So you think it's more Price than it was manager John, or maybe even Dustin Pedroia with everything that happened in Baltimore earlier in the year?
I'd say Price and Pedroia. Weren't those your two leaders last year?
I don't know.
Wasn't Pedroia the one sitting here like, I'm the leader. Look at me, I'm the leader. Or as Adam Jones calls him, the little leader.
That's not me. That's them. That's everybody else. Like he was.
But with the media, wasn't he?
Oh, sure.
He was saying like everybody's looking for a leader. Like I'm right here.
But
didn't
Price,
he say that?
But Price with his teammates, I never actually thought that was any kind of an issue. He always
there's your source.
As soon as he got there, I mean, he's buying them,
Jordan
cleats,
and
doing everything that he can to ingratiate himself into
here. I am
into the clubhouse. So I don't know. I never thought that there would ever be any kind of issue between Price and those other guys. It just felt like
I don't think it's an issue, but I think it's an acknowledgement that his sort of unhappiness seeped into the rest of the team and that people being unhappy with whether it's the environment or the media or the manager, that seeped into the team and affected them last year.
I just think they're all a bunch of whiny babies and they're using manager John as the scapegoat because he's gone. And for their failure yet again in the playoffs, it's easy to just say,
they're very clearly trying to set a different tone. I think that's undeniable. I mean, just for Price to even acknowledge any of that stuff to start and say, I could have handled it better. Like to me, somebody, whether it's Sam Kennedy or John Henry or it's Werner, or it's Cora, has said, look, we're not going to have a repeat of what we had last year. We're not going through this again. Because they're clearly trying to set a completely different tone than what the tone was last year, which was sort of us against the world, screw all you guys, media and fans.
Well, specifically, Maz, you think someone went to Price and said, hey, you got to assimilate here because You know, you're not going anywhere. Just go out there, pitch, and then, you know, after, if you want to opt out, fine. But you think someone went to him, right?
Oh, I think someone close to him, whether it was his agent or, you know, someone on the team or Cora, or someone went to him and said, hey, look at the free agent market. Okay, the free agent market's garbage. Yeah. I mean, the teams aren't giving money to these guys like they were. So if you think you're going to opt out and get your money back, you're not. Okay, you're not. So the best thing for you to do is to improve your attitude and pitch well, because you might have 5 years there. You might have five more. Do you want them to be a miserable five or a bearable five? They're not going to be great either way. Okay, that ship has left the harbor. You made a mistake. You shouldn't have come here. But beyond that, do you want it to be miserable like it was last year, or do you want it to be better? But what I find interesting is most people, Chris, interpreted that Betts comment and the Bogarts comment as being about Farrell. Like, okay, Farrell's gone, so now they'll speak up and it's about the manager. I find it interesting that you think it's got more to do with Price and even Pedroia.
I do. I mean, I think it has to do with the tone in the clubhouse, which starts with the players. And I think they're trying to have a different tone this year and just have it be a more, like, you know, Mookie had another thing where he's like, you know, I want to make sure I'm going to be myself. I'm going to come in here and, you know, I'm going to come in here and make sure I'm smiling and I'm getting other people smiling. Is that all about the manager?
No, I can see where I can see where your mind goes to David Price, because he has been pretty much a mope since he's been
here.
And you know that he's miserable. So, okay. But so this is what, just focus on the play. You're not telling me you're going to have theme days? Are you going to go into the clubhouse like, oh, today's smiles day, everybody? Like, what's this about? Like, it irks me that you've already heard these guys saying, oh, it wasn't fun. It needs to be more fun.
Well, that was another one. We should have had more fun. And I think there was another Mookie comment about,
how much more
about,
fun can you have with all the stupid dancing at the end of these games when you win in them?
I
what
like
else do you
the
want
dancing.
To do?
I'm cool with the dancing.
So I was going to say that the Bradley comment today,
I know,
to me sort of flies in the face of what Mookie said. And see, so if it was so negative in there, and it was, it was.
But you got to hold on. I'll let you finish. But I'm just going to say, you got to remember the source on this one, because I'm going to circle this back. But go ahead.
Okay, how much did it really affect what they won the division?
Yep.
So they can't blame the playoff loss on the negativity in the clubhouse. Because by then, I don't think anyone was talking about the negativity. I think they were talking about the playoff games, and everybody's focused on the playoffs. Once the postseason gets here, Chris, everybody focuses on baseball.
Yeah.
So I sort of hear Jackie Bradley's comment today, and I say, all right, well, and I don't know if Jimmy Stewart, our producer, has it handy. But the Bradley comment today was something more along the lines of, hey, you know, I don't know what people are talking about. I was Jimmy, go ahead and play it.
I think it's perspective. Everybody has their own perspective. I had fun winning 93 games. I don't know how they felt, but... Yeah, we were first place. We won the division. We didn't get as far as we got beat by the champions. So I enjoyed it.
So go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so I would say, so that was one of the guys who I think felt he was mistreated by Farrell. So that would be someone that would, you know, sort of point to Farrell and say, well, it wasn't a clubhouse issue, you know. And that's, I'm not saying that's what Jackie's saying, but that would be one of the people who, if you put truth serum in him, would say, look, I didn't enjoy the John Farrell experience. You know, because John Farrell was always sort of, it seemed like, skeptical or doubtful as to whether Jackie was really the guy.
He didn't believe in him.
He didn't believe in him. No, and quick to drop him down in the lineup and move him out of the lineup for other reasons. So I think that's, it's his perspective. He just said, he used the word perspective. I think his perspective would be different than Mookie's or Xander's.
Okay, that's a good point. The Bradley Farrell thing certainly felt real. You mentioned something off the air a second ago as it pertained to Chris Sale. Chris Sale made some comments this week, too. And I talked about this some with Felger the other day. But before we get to that, you know, Chris Sale faded at the end of last season, as we all know. I warned people that this was going to happen, and no one wanted to believe it at the time when I brought it up last April. It was just typical, you know, you're a negative dink, and you're just trying to stir something up and create a story. All I was doing was looking at the numbers and the history and had read some of Sale's past when they tried to get him to get quicker routes, more ground ball outs, so that he could minimize his pitch count and be better at the end of the year. He faded again in the final 10 starts. His ERA was over 4. So the Red Sox are clearly modifying things. Here's what Sale said the other day.
Once I got home, kind of reflected on the season, that was kind of when it was like, all right, something needs to change. Like I said, I came into spring training, I think, a little too prepared. You know, I felt like I had something to prove last year, too. You know, I'm here in a new city with a new team, and, you know, felt like I had to kind of prove myself again. And I think that kind of came back to bite me in the end, but not going to look back and can't change it now. So, you know, that's kind of where we got, where we are now. How we got here is to, like I said, kind of build up and maintain throughout the whole year.
So what strikes you now about Sale, Chris?
Well, what's interesting to me just about Sale is that it seems like his performance down the stretch and in the playoffs, and the ERA was 8.38, and he gave up 4 home runs in that series against the Astros, including that huge one to Bregman in Game 4, the final game of the series. It doesn't seem like it really has stuck. To your point about him faltering down the stretch, which is his career pattern, and then not pitching well in the playoffs, and he had never pitched in the playoffs. The whole thing last year coming into it for Price was this guy has to prove he can pitch in the playoffs, right? But I don't hear any of that attached to Sale. And I feel like some of it should, because he faltered down the stretch of the regular season, and I know it was his first playoff experience, and he was run down and tired, but he was one of the major reasons they lost that series. So it just blows my mind a little bit that it's sort of this guy comes in, it's like, well, this guy has nothing to prove. It's like, really? Because you told me it was all about, you told me the regular season doesn't matter with Price, and it's all about the postseason.
So what concerns me more about Sale, okay, the playoff game was his first game. Okay, Price as a starter was what, 0-8? 0-7?
Definitely
like
a much longer track record.
So to me, that's why the questions existed about Price and they didn't exist about Sale. However, what you're saying about the end of the season, you couldn't be more right. I'm with you on this one. I feel the same way. How are you going to fix this? This guy fades. He's 6'6", 180 pounds. He fades. How do you fix that? And so, look, they found a way to do it with Pedro and even Lester, who was way more durable than this guy. Lester, they had to build in a break in the middle of the season, if you remember. They would give him like the start before the All-Star break on Tuesday or Wednesday, hold him out that weekend, and then not start him until basically the Sunday after the All-Star break. So Lester would get almost 2 weeks of a break in the middle of the season, 10 days or something to that effect. And Lester is a freaking horse compared to this guy, and I mean that physically. So with Sale, I think you're absolutely right to question whether or not he's going to make it through the end of the year, Chris. I don't think that that's wrong at all. In fact, I wish more people were doing it.
And I like the guy, but I'm just trying to say, let's apply the same standard. I mean, look, Sale had a much better introductory season than Price did. I'm not going to dispute that or deny that.
I mean, at the end of the day, they won the same number of games.
Yes, 17 games, you know, down the stretch. But when it was down the stretch for Price, you know, his last 7 starts, the ERA was 4.08 in 16. Last year, last 8 starts for Sale, the ERA was 4.30. And then both guys were not good in the playoffs. And Sale, I feel like people forget, Sale got into 2 games in that series. Now, the second one, he's coming out of the bullpen, but it's like, hey, protect this lead. It didn't happen. So if you're telling me that when you come to the Boston Red Sox and you're the ace of the staff, that it's not about the regular season, it's about what you do in the postseason, then wouldn't you have some questions about Sale?
Yeah, to me, the durability is a problem with Sale. And they're conscious of it now because they're talking about it entirely differently than they were before. And, you know, the bullpen thing coming out of the bullpen, I don't give him a break for that.
Okay.
First of all, it's the postseason. Too bad. I mean, you got to do the out of the ordinary in the postseason. Secondly, he was a reliever early in his career. He's pitched out of the bullpen before. There's no issue there. Chris Sale can handle that. The durability thing, what worries me too about it, frankly, is that he doesn't sound fully convinced it's going to work. So I don't know if it's because he's reached a point in his career where he's tried different things and he hasn't had his legs in September and October, and maybe I'm reading into it too much. But he doesn't sound to me totally convinced that this is going to be best for him. It would not surprise me if he starts out poorly.
It'd be interesting to see. I mean, I think the thing is, I'm not sure that he's not convinced or he's not committed. It's, you know, you covered baseball much longer than I did. Pitchers in particular are creatures of habit. And so when you start changing anything for them, they don't like it. And they want to know, why am I changing? I've been successful. This is what I do. This is my plan. What are we changing here? Why are we doing this?
Well, see, and that's ultimately what I feel, that he's looking at it going, I don't know if this is going to work or it's going to be the right thing. He isn't believing it. That's just my 2 cents. We'll wrap it up with Gasper next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Give me your brief synopsis of the Celtics.
I mean, I think that they've lost their defensive identity here. And I think you have some guys who are more concerned about their offense. Terry Rozier, to me, is one of those guys where he's become more concerned about his offense. And defensively, they've gotten lax. Like, you look at those games. When they lost that game to Toronto, they gave up 58 in the first half. Lost to Indiana, 59 in the first half. The first half that LeBron had his new toys, 64 points the Celtics allowed. And then 61 the other night against the Clippers. You can't win that way if you're giving up 60 points in the first half all the time. And this is the top defensive team, at least statistically, in the NBA. So I think they've gotten lax defensively, and I think they've lost that identity. They are first and foremost a defensive team.
So is, go ahead, Murray. Go.
Is Marcus Smart the cure-all, or is it something deeper?
I think it's something deeper. I think he certainly would help, but I think it's something deeper. I think you have some guys in the beginning of the year like Jaylen Brown and Rozier who were more, I don't want to say committed, but maybe more focused defensively. And I think now those people are looking at it at this point in the year and saying, well, you know, we need points. We need points. And they're more focused on the offensive end. And they've lost their edge a little bit defensively. I think you put Kyrie in that category.
See, I'm not, believe it or not, I'm not worried about the defense. Because I think come the spring, they'll dig in. They'll dig in on defense. I'm worried about the offense more. I am, because when other teams dig in, I'm not sure that they can score beyond Kyrie, Chris.
Oh, that's a fair point. But if you're asking me about this stretch and what's gone wrong, I think 30,000-foot view, yeah, and I've said it all year long, they need another rotation scorer. But this particular stretch, their defense has just been an abomination. And that's their identity as a team. So you can't get away from that. You can't. And also, you know, look, Brad talked about it too. I think that there are times where offensively they settle, you know, it's the first shot or the first sort of opportunity for somebody to go one-on-one instead of moving the ball, keeping the ball movement going. Because when you're talking about that issue offensively, what will help guys like Marcus Morris and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier is ball movement, you know, not having to go one-on-one, not having to break a guy down off the dribble. So I think that's part of it, too. You know, I just think there's a little bit of a lack of focus and attention to detail at this point in the season for the Celtics.
Okay, before we let you go, Chris, do you two meatballs have a show tomorrow?
We do. And we do. Murray's super excited about it.
Yeah, 11 to 2, and then the Celtics show at noon, yes.
Yeah, Murray's been on fumes the last couple of days.
So there'll be plenty more Celtics talk.
I mean, you wouldn't know it because he still comes over the airwaves as strong as ever.
Yeah.
But sitting next to him, I can tell.
There's a physical slump about him, even if it's not. I mean, there's just he's like a melting camera.
Worst week in sports.
This is you think this is worse than MLB All Star Week?
I'll take MLB All Star break over this week 10 times out of 10.
See, I can always tell because Murray looks at me, and then, you know, we spent a lot of time together, Chris, on this program. As you know, we're like a family here on Felger and Mass.
Okay,
and he starts to look at me like, "Oh God, would you shut the hell up already, please? Stop."
I know that look. Yeah,
I am so.
I feel you, Mass. I've
seen
it.
So tired of hearing your voice. That's what he says.
Yeah, it's just on Wednesday. I thought the whole day it was Thursday, and turns out it was a fake Thursday. Yesterday was the real Thursday, and today feels like Saturday, and it's not.
Just all right, Gasparino.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Yeah, you too.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.